So we're going to move on today, and I would like to start with a question. Has everybody, no, that's an assumption. Has anybody had the experience of something dramatic happening, potentially traumatic, some big surprise, and you just it throws your thinking all off. You can't think. Like you can't think clearly. You gotta go, clear your mind before you can start to process this. Is that an experience anyone's had? Yeah, Don. Maybe someone that you love has died, and it's taken a while to be able to come back to that clarity that you're used to. John has excellent
It
clarity.
doesn't have to be traumatic all the time either. It can just be something that's the import is great. Maybe it's not going to be bad. Maybe it's something that's really good that's happening, like a surprise party.
Yeah, a
Something that's
surprise is a
great.
good example. It might
Or
a
not
major
everybody
change
enjoys
from what
surprises.
you're
Not everybody enjoys surprises at all.
Right.
Probably partly for this reason.
Right. So major events, major big changes that are unexpected can cause this sort of loss of the ability to concentrate for a minute or to follow what's going on. That's why they say after someone dies that you're close to not to make major decisions for a year. Because with some deep traumas like that, I'll use the word potentially traumatic experience because I like that phrase. It can take a year to really get your clear thinking back. And that's totally natural. That's human. I don't know the science behind it, but I think many people experience it. So, one of the skills or characteristics of people or that correlate with resilience is people being able to concentrate under that sort of pressure situation. And I want to emphasize that this is not about changing our evolutionary response patterns. Shock happens, that brain fuzz happens. But it's a trainable skill to be able to bring your attention back and to stay, to keep your attention where you want it to be so that you can think through what to do. So that you can make good decisions.
Often I find an emergency very easy to deal with. It's the aftermath difficult because there's a different part of my brain that's used in each type of experience or each category, each zone of the same experience, let's say.
Yeah, I think I've heard that before, that crystal clarity in the middle of the emergency. And then afterwards, it's like your brain just freaks out for a little while. So this is relevant to resilience, of course, because that tends to be the sort of situation where resilience is needed. So concentration is a useful and trainable resilience skill. You're looking confused, Sean.
I'm having trouble separating the biology from this.
Right. So there's, you mean there's the shock response.
No.
Oh.
So, this summer things were stressful and that stupid fire headed for my house mm-hmm. and things got more stressful. Mm-hmm. And it was a time when I was supposed to be doing a lot of close, detailed, concentrating work. I was reading proofs.
Mm-hmm.
Not good. And it was not my best concentration. Luckily, everything went okay, but it took, I read everything like 17 times and was dumber than dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be kind. Dirt's smarter than I was at that point. And probably had better concentration skills. But at that point, I realized, you know, that was just exactly what the literature research tells us, for instance, that kids who are undergoing stress and trauma in their lives aren't going to have their full learning potential for a variety of neurological reasons and right. biological reasons because they're undergoing stress. And we just don't learn well and don't concentrate well when we're undergoing stress.
Right. So that is true.
I'm having trouble there.
What we can do is, within that range of not being there.
But if I was a wonderful Buddhist monk, I would have dealt with it better.
Yeah, I don't like that term better, but I get
it. I know, that's very judgmental. I would have had more greater concentration had I been a better trained,
Had you better trained your concentration before?
Yes, there we go.
Right. Okay. So within that realm of less than optimal,
okay,
it can be worse or better depending on how good we are at bringing our concentration to what we need to do.
Okay, sorry. I got stuck somewhere and I got my sliding scale back. I'm good. Sorry.
So that's good. That is good to clarify. Concentration is what we're going to look at today. And of course, I have to define concentration for you. When I say it, this is what I mean. It's concentration is the ability to focus on what you deem to be important for as long as you choose to focus on it.
Could you say that again?
Mm-hmm. The ability to focus on what you deem to be important for as long as you choose to focus on it. Okay. Now, fortunately, concentration is one of the three basic skills of mindfulness, right? You remember what I'm always talking about? Concentration, clarity, and equanimity. That's right. So the fact is that even without specifically training concentration, doing meditation eventually over time is going to improve your general level of concentration. And I wonder if you think back, because I know all three of you have been meditating for some years now, if not much longer, but just here with me for a few years. So think back to before you meditated or early on in your meditation and think about now and think, do you think that your ability to concentrate has improved over the years? Uncle Don saying yeah. Sean saying no.
It's age.
Well, that's one way to look at it. It's up and down, Deb says. Okay. Here's another thought. What's it called? Thought experiment? Okay.
Experiment, not experiment. Gedanken experiment.
Okay.
This was Einstein's use of it.
Okay, well, this is, I'm going to ask you to think of something, okay? So imagine doing something that you do fairly regularly, not something that you hate, but also not something that you absolutely love, because that's too easy to pay attention to. Maybe prepping for a class or a lecture or doing homework or reading a book or something like that. Something that might take you an hour or two. Imagine yourself doing that. So you picture yourself there. Have you all got something that you're imagining? Mm-hmm. Okay, and every now and again something happens. Maybe the cat or the dog comes in and wants a little attention. So you stop and pet the dog or the cat, and then you go back to work. Or maybe you hear a loud noise outside and you stop and look out the window, and once you've figured it out, you come back and go back to work. Or you stop and make a cup of tea and you come back and continue. And then at the end of your couple of hours, or however long it takes you to do whatever this thing is, you finish the job. So you can all picture finishing the job of something that you've done. Would you say that, is that sort of accurate how it works for you when you're trying to get something done? Little distractions come and go, and but you come back and after you've dealt with it, come back and work some more. No?
Sometimes it completely throws me off if it's something with my cats.
Right.
Because it can get very demanding, and I can be on the brink of a catastrophe, an avalanche, if I don't stop them from doing that. And if I don't give them what they want at some point, they keep coming back.
But once you've dealt with them, you can come back and continue, right?
Yeah, but I have to give them what they want. Well, sometimes I can't so much because the interruption is too great.
Sometimes it's
greater if I resist helping them and instead try to stick with what I'm doing. Other times it's that I get so into the flow, because one of the things that they're wanting now is a playtime in the middle of the day. They want that more than the food that I give them in the middle of the day. The food comes after. And they really look forward to the playtime. It can be either one of them, but typically it's my boy cat that instigates. I'm just kind of lost when I come back.
Okay. And that's something to bear in mind. So that you can have distractions like that that pull you away completely. But you can also have smaller distractions that you come back to your work and continue, right? So at the end of your period of time, you finished your job. Would you say that you had focused on the job for that period of time? You had a few distractions, but you came back and you finished the job.
Or I didn't come back until days later.
Okay, so that's not an example that we're looking at. We're looking at an example in which you finished something.
Well, another cat incident.
Wait, Don, I want to stop you because we're running a little bit late.
Got it.
And this is just an example at this point. But does it make sense that when you're focusing on some work or study or something activity, you can have distractions, you can go off and do other things and come back and carry on working and finish what you're doing, right?
Often.
So the point of this imagination is to point out that concentration does not mean that you don't have distractions. Okay? Concentration means it's about how much, and this is where what you were saying is relevant, Uncle Don, how much the distraction throws you off, how much you're able to come back after it, whether or not you're able to choose whether to attend to the distraction. And of course, sometimes if the cat's going to get into trouble, then you got to do something or there's consequences. But you can choose whether or not now is the time to make a cup of tea. You can have distractions, but you're able to come back to the task at hand. that's what concentration is about. It's not about never having a distraction. Okay. So given that, I wonder if you look back on your meditation practice, if it seems different to you. Are you able to come back quicker from distractions than you used to be able to? Not are you able to stay without distractions, but have you gotten better at noticing when you're distracted and coming back?
Yes.
More often.
So that is meditation, building the skill of concentration just by the fact that you're doing it. Now, there's a couple kinds of concentration too. Actually, there's more than two kinds of concentration, but there's two kinds that are relevant to tonight's discussion. The first is what people typically think of when they think of concentration, and especially with meditation, which is called single point focus. And single point focus is when you focus on one narrow thing and you just stay with it. So things like mantra, some breath practices, staring at a candle, those sorts of things would be single point focus, because you're sticking to this one small thing and not paying attention to anything else. This can lead to what meditators will call absorption states, when you seem to lose awareness of everything else because you're so focused on this thing. It can be very pleasant, and it can be often what people get addicted to when they're learning meditation in the concentration realm. So to demonstrate this, we're going to meditate for 1 minute on a candle. So I'm going to share the screen and show you a candle. And what I'd like you to do is just watch that candle flame. Whatever you do, keep your attention on the candle flame, okay? So I'm going to share screen. Wait a minute, let me make sure it's up here. Candle flame. Okay. And share screen. Okay, so 1 minute, just watch the candle. This talk continues in part two. You can use the link provided with this file to watch a candle on YouTube and participate in the exercise.